Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. Raptors take this one. Interesting game for sure. Raptors were able to jump out to just an absolutely massive lead. Like, it looked to be one of the all-time blowouts, honestly. When the Wizards were down 42-13 at one point in the first quarter. 42-13. That was with 2 minutes left in the first quarter. It was 42-13. Washington just did not come out to play. They were just turning the ball over. The Raptors were running great offense. They got a bunch of deflections as well. Really propelled the team forward. And, yeah, I mean, just everything was clicking for the Raptors. I wouldn't even say it was just red hot. They were just dominating a team in the Wizards that just didn't come prepared to play. And, you know, at that rate, you were thinking, well, Washington's going to make a comeback, but realistically, Raptors going to hold on and win. That's where I would say the Wizards actually made a really good effort because, you know, I thought at some point pride kicked in for them, and it started with their defense. The Raptors had a seven-minute stretch where they didn't score from that point onwards. It went from 42-13, and then at one point it became like 44-35. So the Wizards went on this really strong run, and a lot of it was just their physicality picked up, their defense picked up, their intensity picked up, and again, their pride kind of kicked in. And, at that point it was more of a competitive game. From that point onward, the Raptors always led, but it was kind of a back-and-forth affair. Washington threatening to sort of maybe launch a comeback, but the Raptors just doing enough offensively. And realistically, like, it was a really good offensive display from both teams. Like, I thought the Washington Wizards did a really good job after, again, being down 42-13. After that point, I thought they did a really good job of spreading the floor, touching the paint, making the right kick-out passes. They, you know, were unselfish with their ball movement. Took 40 threes, made 16 of them. You know, Jordan Poole did a really good job of touching the paint and kicking out. He had some silly shots. I mean, it's Jordan Poole, but, you know, he was able to create a ton of offense for Washington, 29 points, 12 assists. Denny Avdija, I thought he just did a great job of using his size and physicality. The Raptors clearly have very little of it. And so he was able to, especially as the game went on, he started going stronger and stronger to the paint, and the Raptors had very little answers for him. He had 32 points, which was also quite strong. And then, of course, Corey Kispert has just become like a very underrated Raptor killer in a way, where he just consistently has knocked down a large share of his threes against the Raptors, and he was 21 points for 5 of 7 from 3. And, you know, the Wizards eventually found like a good small ball look. I felt like they, you know, probably most of the game they kind of played small ball anyway, but they booted Johnny Davis out of the starting group. I mean, he just wasn't doing anything, and he's, you know, has really struggled to start his career. Eugene Omorui, the Rexdale, you know, native. I mean, outside of him beefing with Kelly randomly, which was strange, of all people to have a go at, Kelly Olynyk, is just, I don't know. He's just not really that kind of agitator type. But those two were kind of going at each other for a while. But Eugene struggled offensively, 1 of 6. He typically actually goes off against the Raptors, but tonight was really quiet. And the Wizards found this good combination with Patrick Baldwin Jr. coming off the bench and with some good size at 6'10", can shoot the three, space out, and, yeah, just did a good job for them. Meanwhile, on the Raptors side, though, I thought the Raptors' offensive execution was also quite good. Outside, again, of that seven-minute stretch where they were just ice cold, right? In that second quarter, the Raptors only finished with 21 points. But 42 in the first quarter, 36 in the third, and 31 in the fourth quarter. It felt like whenever the Raptors needed to get a bucket, they could. And, of course, that says a lot about Washington's defense. Of course, that says a lot about the fact that, you know, Washington also went smaller, you know, whatever. But realistically, I thought the offensive execution was quite good. Emmanuel Quickley tonight was excellent. 31 points is a season high. 13 assists is also quite good. Not a season high because he had 18 against, Phoenix last month. But finishes with 31 points, 13 assists, 7 rebounds, goes 9 of 15 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3, a perfect 10 for 10 from the foul line. 4 turnovers and 5 fouls, which is a little, regrettable, but ultimately a plus 22, the highest mark on the team. And especially in the fourth quarter, because it wasn't really like crunch time necessarily, like it wouldn't be categorized as crunch time because Raptors were up like between 8 and 12 points kind of deal. But whenever they needed a bucket, they could go to Quickley. And I thought they did a really good job of spacing the floor out for Emmanuel to operate. you know, the Raptors ran a decent, you know, variety of sets for him to attack. You know, they had, you know, the three-man game between him, RJ, and Kelly were the strongest points. So they ran a lot of, like, you know, horns were, you know, they would have RJ and Kelly line up at the three-point line, and then IQ has the ball at the top, and he decides which way he wants to go. Typically, he went with Kelly as the pick-and-roll screener, but that got, you know, IQ some separation from his man and a bit of momentum going downhill, and he was able to really capitalize on that and go strong to the basket and both finish or draw fouls, and both times he was quite efficient. They also, honestly, probably one of my favorite plays of the Raptors' year. I'm going to go back and look at it tomorrow, but there was a play where the Raptors actually had gotten the ball to, I believe, Gary on a high-low, and Gary had the ball, you know, in the paint. The Raptors, even though Gary had gotten the ball in the paint, Darko decided to call a timeout, and then it was like, okay, what is he going to drop? At this point, it was a pretty important time to score because Washington had been scoring a little bit, and, you know, they wanted to see if you can get some. They came out of that timeout, and they had just a really creative play. It's elevator doors, which, you know, you have obviously seen quite a bit from the Warriors over the years, and this is a play that's, like, you know, at least 10 years old now. We've seen it from, like, you know, the original versions of the Warriors when they became, like, this juggernaut. But basically, yeah, they had two guys screen for Quickly. Quickly was ran right through that little gap, and then they closed like an elevator door, and they got IQ an open three, and he knocked it down. So I just thought the Raptors put Quickly into a good situation. Even before that, to start the fourth quarter, the Raptors went to a pretty unique lineup, I would say, but it was five guards on the floor, and a lot of that was just a space out for Quickly to attack. But, you know, you had Quickly, Gary Trent Jr., Bruce Brown, Grady Dick, and then Garrett Temple was serving as a small ball center for that group. And, you know, even though they didn't ultimately win their minutes, because as you would expect, a small ball, like five guards on the floor, is just not going to be able to defend at all, especially at the rim. The Raptors actually did generate quite a bit of offense with that group, and actually playing that lineup to largely a net neutral was actually a big win, because when the Raptors went to their second unit at the start of the game, again, after they had given them the cushiest lead possible, 42-13, the second unit just came in and was just not doing anything. Like, when I say, like, they were just, like, they were making you claw your eyes out watching that, like, that combination. It was just not good. You know, granted, part of that was I didn't think RJ leading the group as the point guard made all the greatest reads, because he charged in a couple times and forced a couple of shots. But, like, you can understand him trying to get it going when, like, he's out there with Jordan, with Jalen McDaniels. He's out there with Bruce Brown, who, you know, played much better in the second half, especially in that small, like, guard lineup. But ultimately, you know, in the first lineup, wasn't working well. Malik Williams, the 10-day, continues to come in and just, like, as you would expect for a 10-day, just look out of sync with the team. I mean, there was points where he was screening his own teammates, trying to figure out which way to go. Javon Freeman Liberty, who just put his head down and just drove to the basket every single time, which, you know, led to him going 0-for-5, and not a lot of good reads in that stretch either. A couple of missed passes, just a really just like single track minded with zero results type of game. And so, you know, Darko decided to change it up. And honestly, like, yeah, change it up. Like, players like Jalen McDaniels, every time they come in the game, they do very little. Like tonight, 4 minutes, minus 10, you know, forces up a shot here or there, 0-for-3. Like, 0-for-3 in 4 minutes, really? You know, like, he's done this literally from start to finish on the season. Like, just, honestly, especially when you have players back in the lineup now, and it's not like, okay, whatever happened last week, or I guess earlier this week, where, you know, they went into Minneapolis and they only had 8 players. It's like, okay, fine, McDaniels can play there. But, like, if you have, like, even 10 players, just never play him. Like, you have to have standards. And I'm actually really happy that Garrett Temple got to sub in for the second half and really just come in and actually play a good role. And you know, in any case, they spaced out the floor and they got Quickly a lot of space to attack. That was the kind of the name of the game for the Raptors, was getting into the paint. Kelly Olynyk, I thought, did a great job of finishing in the basket. You know, you still see the playmaking from Kelly, but, you know, now, especially when you have other playmakers in Quickly, in RJ, you know, Kelly can play more of that, like, roller, role as well, in addition to being the playmaker at the top, setting guys up. And you're seeing Kelly finish, you know, really, really well, especially against a Wizards team that, like, you know, they're not they were bigger than the Raptors, right? But, like, at the same time, they had no real good matchup for Kelly. And he did a great job of just being active around the glass, finishing things, being very, very efficient, you know, turning sort of, like, stagnant plays into opportunities to score. I thought, yeah, I mean, Gary also played a really good game in this one. Gary finished with 20 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. Gary's just finishing the season on a really high note, and I'm actually really, really happy for him. I know he can be up and down as a player, and people already have their judgments out. He's also been a Raptor for a while, so, like, I get why people would be quite cemented in these things. But I have to say, though, like, the way he's finished the season to me has really stood out. I mean, I made this point previously, but, you know, a lot of players could be checking out on the season. Raptors aren't going to the playoffs. You know, who knows how many of these players are, like, super invested in being here long-term and all that kind of stuff. But I think for Gary, who's a, you know, prospective free agent, he's showing what he's got. And not like a, okay, I'm going to put my numbers up and, you know, that's going to help my case in free agency. I think he's actually just playing the game in the right way more and more often. Like, the fact that he had 5 assists, 3 steals tonight, 7 rebounds. I mean, Gary previously had been kind of the king of the 21-1, you know, stat line, right? He scores at a decent efficiency. Obviously, he could knock down the 3. But he wasn't contributing too much else in the other areas. I thought Gary did a really good job tonight, just, like, competing, scrapping. I mean, the Wizards did a good job of locking in on him and sort of trying to take away his offense. And he did, you know, he made the right passes, you know, played a little pick and pop with Kelly and stuff like that. Like, I just thought Gary did a really good job of playing within the offense. And then to start the game, you know, when you ask the question of, like, why did the Raptors start off to a 42-13 start? Like, what were they doing really well? They were getting a lot of deflections, and they were really harassing the Wizards and forcing mistakes out of them. And a lot of that was led by Gary. So you really have to give Gary a lot of credit. Late game, again, not quite crunch time, but when they needed a bucket, they got Gary a couple runners, a couple driving layups. He actually left one or two short too, but just overall picked his spots really well. And the fact that Gary had 20 with only making 2 threes on only 4 attempts, like, A, that says the Wizards were really taking away Gary's threes, but also it really suggests that, like, Gary was able to score and find other ways to contribute within the offense. And that's all people have ever really wanted, right? Like, of course, like, we know what he can do, right? If it's just on the scoring alone, he's actually, you know, really, really strong. But, like, when it's also the fact that he can contribute in other areas, when he can also put pressure on the defense and play make, that's when you start to look really, really good. I just thought Gary played a really good game. RJ, you know, I think one of the reasons why he was a -7, meanwhile the rest of the starters was +17 for Kelly, +15 for Gary, +22 for Quickly, and +17 for Ochai. One of the reasons RJ was a -7 was because he had to play with that second unit. Now, like, of course, you would expect him to try to, like, play really well with the starting lineup or with the second unit because he's the best player in that grouping. But at the same time, like, those other guys were giving him nothing to work with. And RJ had to, like, barrel and force his way. You know, I think there's still things to be done in terms of, like, picking the right spots or getting a little bit better. These are, like, realistically small improvements that'll get better with time. The more important thing is RJ puts pressure on the paint all game. This guy will drive like 20 times a game, and it's great. He touches the paint and then he tries to make a play out of that. Now, the 6 turnovers tonight were obviously costly, right? You would have loved to see him shoot a little bit more efficiently than a 9 of 19, although it's not necessarily inefficient. It's just kind of like average. But he gives you 8 rebounds, he gives you 2 assists, and I just thought he did a really good job of moving the defenders. I thought, especially when he played with groups that, quite frankly, weren't just third stringers, who probably won't be on the Raptors next year, I thought he actually did a really good job fitting into the starting lineup. Him, Kelly, and Quickly did a really good job of playing off of each other. Those 3 guys generated the majority of the offense for Toronto. And again, it's just RJ's ability to go to the bucket. I mean, playing some bully ball to start the game, too. He was also one of the main reasons why the Raptors got off to, again, a 29-point lead in the first quarter. So credit, kudos to him. And then Ochai was just kind of like, you know, typically what Ochai does, which is, like, play defense, you know, use his athleticism, and just sort of, like, play around the main guys. He had a couple good cuts, which is nice. You know, he missed some free throws at the end, which obviously wasn't great. Although that at that point, the game was kind of like already wrapped up, so whatever. But, you know, I think for him, it's just like finding ways to make his defense and his athleticism matter and find other ways for it to sort of transpose on this. Like, I didn't really mind the way he played tonight. I mean, I thought he did a good job guarding Jordan in the moments that he was matched up against Jordan Poole. He also, you know, switched on to Corey Kispert a little bit too. Those guys scored decently overall, but I didn't really feel like it was against Ochai all that much. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of, as a fifth starter, he's okay. I think, like, obviously once Scotty comes back to the group and when, you know, Yaka comes back to the group in the future, I don't see Ochai as the starter. I don't see Kelly as the starter either. But at the same time, like, what Ochai does is quite important. Like, you know, sacrificing a little bit for the team, you know, really locking on defense, you know, not being a very high usage player, obviously knocking down a couple shots when they come. Like, you know, it's look, the Raptors could use a 3-and-D guy in the starting group, especially somebody who can cover guards. And I think that's the challenge for Ochai. More importantly, it's just good to see him back on the court after that terrible fall he suffered against the Knicks. Now, the second unit, I mean, Grady, I thought, played really well, and that continues to be great. Unfortunately, Grady had to leave this game with a groin contusion, which is very much on the nose for a man named Grady Dick. But in any case, it was also quite unfortunate. I don't even know what specifically happened. Like, it wasn't like, I know he drove a couple times and maybe took a bit of contact, but like, it didn't really see like it was like a very obvious time, an instance where he got injured. Grady went to the locker room. He went to the locker room on his own power, walked off, like it was okay. But in any case, when he was available to play and ready, like I thought he did a really good job. Once again, being a threat, 3 of 5 from three, just like automatic, knocked down his first two looks from three. Continues to, you know, find opportunities to cut back door and just attack and finish strong at the basket. You know, even with contests and stuff like that, I think he's done a decent job of, between the fact that he's 6'8", between the fact that he's got some dexterity to finish with either hand, and also he's fearless. Like, he will step in there and attack. I think it's just a good combination for a guy who can diversify his offense. Like, everyone knows he wants to shoot the three, but he can also parlay that aggression by the defense into opportunities for him to go backdoor. And so I thought Grady played well, and then hopefully he's able to play. Hopefully the groin contusion isn't too serious. But also at the same time, you know, the Raptors have, what, like 6 more games in the season, maybe less? 5? No. How many games do they have left in the season? 4 more games. Wow, okay. You know, if he's not available, he's not available. It's 4 games. Bruce Brown played much, much better with better players on the floor, and that's part of the reason why Bruce has struggled here in Toronto. But in that second lineup, second unit lineup, that was just really tough to watch in the second quarter. Once that became like, okay, we're going to play 5 guards, but they're at least going to be good players, like solid pros, then Bruce Brown started making the right cuts and finishing a couple of and-ones and stuff like that. Like, just arriving in the right moments to score. He's obviously a guy who's going to have to feed off of others, and when he has to create for himself, it's going to look really pressed most of the time. But at the same time, he also does have a good knack for when he's going. And I do think that, like, and part of the thing for him in Toronto is he's not really screening for the ball as much. And when I think back to Bruce Brown's effectiveness, like, it's like small ball center. It's like when he's involved in small pick and rolls, or when he's bringing like a weak defender into the play and stuff like that. Like, it's just not happening as much for Toronto. Like, he's not in the same spots. And yeah, it's a transition. It's an adjustment. You know, who knows after next week if he's going to be here long term. But still, I thought at least in the second half he acquitted himself a lot better. And then Garrett Temple, I just like the fact that he comes in and he shows the other guys how it's done. Like, and I'm talking about other guys, I'm specifically mean like Malik Williams, Javon Freeman-Liberty, and Jalen McDaniels. Like, Williams is here for on a 10-day. He's whatever, you know, he's a big, but like, maybe we can leave him out of it. But like, Javon and Jalen, right? The Raptors have Jalen for, unfortunately, he's got a player option for next year. So, you know, who knows if he'll exercise that based on the way he played this year. You know, it's free money for him, and I don't think there's a better deal. Javon, I mean, the Raptors totally control his future, but it's like, when you come in a game, like, what are you focusing on, and what are you doing to like cost the team? Like, I felt like Javon really put his head down and just only thought to attack the basket at all times, not looking to play make, not really doing, I mean, he rebounded a little bit, but like, still, you know, it just wasn't a very like thought out approach, you know, to what he was doing. And then for McDaniels, like, I wouldn't say any of these games have been thought out for him. Like, it's genuinely been such a confounding experience watching him all season. And you know what? Like, obviously Garrett's been signed to join the team largely to provide his presence, you know, his advice to players. I'm not even saying he's a coach, but at the same time, it's like, you know, we know that he's older and the Raptors are prioritizing development. But at a certain point, it's like you also have to prioritize like having standards. And Garrett Temple meets the standard each time he comes in. Like, he comes in, he's playing small ball center, which he's never done in his career. But he's like, okay, I'll do whatever the coach says for me to do. I got to play small ball center. Let me go get on the glass, beat two Wizards for it, and score a putback. You know what? I'm going to commit two hard fouls under the basket because I'm not allowing layups. You're going to have to go get it from the foul line. You know, like, wide open three, knock it down. Like, just stuff like that. Make the right passes, you know, like, rotate over, you know, again, contest at the rim. Like, stuff that, like, quite frankly, and this is all due respect to everyone involved, but if you can't outplay Garrett Temple, you shouldn't be playing. So, salute to Garrett for coming in and setting that standard each time. And yeah, he's been a positive contributor each time he comes in. And it goes to show that, like, yes, you can be a third stringer, but there's still a responsibility you got to come into the game with. Still a level of focus and preparation that you got to come in with. And Garrett does that every time, and the other guys don't. So, when you're talking about setting an example for the other guys, like, I really can't think of a better example than Garrett. And, you know, there's a great piece by Mark Spears over at Anscape where he talked to a bunch of NBA players, longtime players who have carved out like a decade plus careers in the league while averaging less than 10 a game. And he's basically, the premise was like, what's the secret for staying in the league? First off, that story featured like a lot of NBA players, and a lot of them were former Raptors, like Corey Joseph, Bismack Biyombo, PJ Tucker, and of course Garrett. And, you know, one of the keys is just like, you got to be focused when you come into the game. And I think that, just Garrett continues to show that. So salute to him. And honestly, it made for a really fun game. Like, I know that people are going to be watching for the Tankathon again. And, you know, you do, quote unquote, worry a little bit when you do win two games. Does that change anything? The Raptors are now only two games back of Memphis for the seventh seed. They are four games up on Portland for fifth. So the Raptors are still in six. The Raptors now have guys healthier and playing, and they're starting to pick up results. It's not too dissimilar from Memphis, who also have guys coming back healthy and starting to play and giving them a couple of results. Like, ideally, the Raptors don't slide above Memphis, you know, for seven. But at the same time, it's like the draft picks already moved on. You can try to manipulate the odds if you want. It's not even necessarily the greatest thing if you want to keep it or lose it. There's like a 50-50 debate if you really want to go in terms of just like surrendering their pick now and then holding them for next year where it's a better draft versus taking it now because the team definitely needs some talent. In any case, the Raptors are actually in the same spot. They just have a little tiny bit less margin for error. But the more important thing is you got guys coming back and playing like meaningful-ish basketball. Like, the stuff that we've seen recently due to the circumstances, not all, like, you know, none of it was generated by the Raptors, let's be honest, right? Outside of them resting for one of those games, like, the other things have been like actual events, very unfortunate things that have happened to the team that have led them to have these, like, you know, ragtag rosters thrown out there. But when you actually have players and you have actually a structure, then you can actually evaluate, like, okay, what did Kelly do well? What did Gary do well? What can he improve on? What did RJ do well? What can he improve on? Et cetera, et cetera. You go down the line. Like, the previous games, it didn't even matter. And honestly, it was done with players who, yes, you would like to know, get a little bit more out of them or get to know them a little bit better. And yes, it was an opportunity potentially for them to pop, but nobody really popped. And also, like, you didn't really get to see anything meaningful out of those games. So I'm at least happier to see this type of result. So the Raptors win tonight. You get a win over in front of the home crowd. That hasn't happened in like a month, basically. So it was actually a really good atmosphere in here. And then, yeah, the season finale, at least at home, takes place on Tuesday when the Raptors host Indiana Pacers with Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton coming into town. So, well, I'm going to look forward to that game. I'm actually pretty excited to see Raptors games once again because, again, you have players that you recognize and you know. And, you know, it's made for a better entertainment product, which is ultimately what we're all here for. So before I get to the three stars, a message from our sponsor. Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty, spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up to take the day to the next level, see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Okay, your three stars. a little tough to pick these threes. I'm not going to lie. Like, the Raptors had a lot of good performances tonight. I'm going to get the first out of Emmanuel Quickley, 31.7 rebounds, 13 assists for Quickley, 9 of 15, 3 of 7 from 3, 10 of 10 from the foul line. We've seen Quickley go up and down a little bit, but this was really, really good. And, you know, just did a great job of, like, controlling the tempo of the play and then also creating advantages and being aggressive to score and play make. Like, the amount of times he touched the paint and the ways he played the pick and roll tonight was really, really well done. Your second star, I'm going to give that to Kelly. I thought Kelly was really, really instrumental in this one. 21 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, a block, 8 of 12 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3, 3 of 4 from the foul line, plus 17. I don't know what was going on between him and Eugene, but, like, it wasn't even close. Like, Eugene had, 4 points, 1 of 6 shooting. I like Eugene, but, like, 1 rebound, you know, 2 assists, 2 steals. Like, it's not even close to what Kelly did. I thought Kelly just gave the whole structure of the offense quite a bit to play off of. Always an outlet, always a, you know, release option when they needed to, you know, get out of a jam, out of a double team. Kelly was there catching it, finishing things in the middle of the paint. Just being a really, really good player, which we know Kelly to be. And then your third star, I think, RJ played a really good game and also generated a lot of offense, maybe even more offense than Gary did. Certainly had more touches. But, like, Gary gave you 20.7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 9 of 16 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3. Did really, like, everything you would want from him. Hit some tough shots, hit some easy shots, made the right passes, rebounded. Like, this is all we're asking for, man. And I thought Gary continues to just, like, take advantage of this time and really showcase, you know, what he can bring to a team, you know. So, for me, at least, I'm personally hoping that he stays. Your Gerald Henderson Award winner, that's going to go to Denny Abdia. 41 points. It felt like that, honestly. 41 minutes, 32 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. I thought he just played super physical. Like, he came into this game with, like, a mind to, like, dominate and, like, really played. We've seen a lot of games against Washington over the years. You know, and you know, I've seen a lot of, like, games where Denny kind of floats. He's not really in the pecking order or whatever. And he just kind of, like, you know, fades into the background a little bit. Tonight, you really noticed him. He was super aggressive. Used his physicality quite a bit. No Kyle Kuzma tonight. So you needed some other forward to come in and soak up that kind of offensive creation. And he did a great job of just, like, being physical, attacking, getting downhill. Does it work as well against a team with stronger defenders? I mean, or even just, like, the type of size to match? Because the Raptors basically throw out a ton of guards and Kelly at center. So probably not, but at the same time, like, I thought Denny just played a really good game. And look, I always respect guys who play hard, even when you play on a terrible team like Washington. So salute to him, I guess. And, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how the rest of the season goes for Toronto. But tonight was fun. Friday was fun. And, you know, before the eclipse takes place on Monday, you will hear from us, me and Blake, on the Raptor show. And again, I already teased it last time, but we have an interview with Marc Gasol to show you on Monday as well. So look forward to that. And, just it's been enjoyable to see the Raptors play with, you know, players that you recognize and players that are significant and players who are contributing. So thanks a lot for listening. Please continue to rate, review, subscribe to The Raptors Show. And yeah, you've been listening to The Raptors Reaction Podcast, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. Have a good rest of your weekend.